And is it at all remotely possible that we can get one third of that building that you're now in? And Danny hesitated and said, gee, I don't know. He says, I haven't even thought about that. And I said, well, why don't you think about that and call me back if you think it's a possibility. And then what we'll do is perhaps do something together. And the next day he called me back. He said, you know, that's a wonderful idea. He said, I think maybe he might go for that because he really wants out of this situation that he's in, needs the money, and perhaps that would work. And I said, all right, let me just work out some details in my own mind as to, you know, what to offer and how to make the offer. And I said, I'll get back to you. And I did just that, meditated on it, and asked for Spirit's guidance, and was told exactly the dollar figure, was told exactly what was needed, the equipment that was needed, and was told exactly how to proceed in going about trying to make this deal. And I called Dan and told him, I said, write these things down. And being that this man doesn't know me, you handle it, you know, with these arrangements. And a very surprising thing happened. Dan called me back and said, the man has accepted the deal exactly the way you've laid it out. Well, that startled me. I didn't think it was all that easy to make these kind of business deals. And then I realized that, hey, what am I doing? I still have my offices in the Huntington Quadrangle, and I still have my quick print, which I certainly am not going to be able to put the time and effort into any longer if this thing materializes. And I said, time to meditate again. And I asked Spirit for some further help, and certainly recognized that in order for this thing to work, I had to have someone to buy my quick print. And overnight, somebody appeared on the scene and said, I understand that you want to sell your quick print. And I said, that's so, and that's true. And it was a man I knew, a man who was going out with a friend of my wife's. And this man was the last human being in the world I would ever expect to want to get into the printing business. He was an engineer at Sperry. And what in God's name would he want with a quick print? But somehow or another, he was interested. And he said, how much do you want for it? And I said, I don't know. I just haven't had the time to think about what this business is worth. And it was pretty good business and doing well financially. And I said, let me meditate, and I'll come up with a figure. And I meditated, and I came up with a figure, and I said, wait a minute. I'm not going to give you my figure. I said, because I want you to be totally comfortable with the sale price And I think the most loving way to handle this would be to let you determine the price on this business. And if you're comfortable with that, that sounds good to me. And he said, what? He said, this isn't the way business deals are done. And I said, I know that, but it's the way I want to do this one. And I said, I know you'll be fair with me. And certainly, if you want and are interested in this business, then that's the terms. And he went home and made up some kind of an elaborate chart with payments and interest and everything else. And he came in the next morning and showed it to me. And it was exactly the figure I had been given. And I said, wow, I have the greatest partner in business a man ever had. I said, there's something wild going on here, and it's really amazing that all these things are happening. And I went back to the lawyer, poor Stanley. He didn't know too much about A Course in Miracles or asking for guidance or talking to Holy Spirit. And I said, Stan, I have another deal here, which came through in guidance. And he went ahead and looked at this thing. He says, just this way? I said, just that way. And that's the way the deal went through. And, of course, I made certain agreements that I would stay with that business and oversee it for 60 days, but that still allowed me the freedom to go ahead and do what I had to do to set up the other plant to get really into the book business. Well, about that time, I was now into a couple of more books. I had another new book called Heal Your Body. And that one came from a gal in New York, so I didn't have to get on a plane. And had one or two more. And I really needed space. And I said, well, Spirit, you gave me here the means to print and the means to do business as we know it. I guess what I need now is a little more space. And suddenly, the people on the other side of the building made an announcement that they were looking for bigger space, had found it, and were leaving that end of the building. And I said, holy mackerel, here I have the space I was looking for. And that gave me a lot more room, and ultimately, I had the whole building. And it was very obvious to me at that point that my business was certainly in my control, but certainly I was being guided by Holy Spirit and running my business with a not-so-very-silent partner who would advise me whenever I needed advice, which was all the time. And it reminded me very much of a line in the Course, which I had grown quite fond of, which, of course, was, you need do nothing. Without total trust and faith in Holy Spirit, that is all that we really have to know. I've been talking for a little while, and I don't know if anyone is getting a little fidgety or you want to ask some questions, but before I continue, If there's anyone that has any questions, I'll certainly be glad to answer them at this point as best I can. Or if anyone wants to kind of take a break before I go on with the story, you certainly may. Does anyone have any questions? Yes. Yeah, the question is there a certain method that I use in meditating? And in the very beginning, I used to pause and ask my question and then wait for my answer, which always comes very quickly, for me at least. But these days, I find myself making absolutely trigger-quick types of asking questions and answering them. So it's really there's no special type of meditation that I use. It's more like thinking out a question and then getting an answer. So the whole process can take as little as several moments, and the answers do come very quickly. And that works for me. There are other people that meditate, you know, differently. And another method I use, which has really been a beautiful method for me, I jog in the mornings, and I find that I have a wide open channel early in the morning to really hear all the answers to my questions. And it's the time that I really say my prayers as well. As I'm running, I find that there's no interference at all, and I have almost like a direct line in that I'm really doing my thing, running and oblivious to everything around me. I don't know where I've jogged or when, you know, time, but I really feel very calm and very relaxed when I do that. Any other questions? Does everyone want to take a break, or let's make it just a few minute break, and then we come back and I'll get it going again. I'll kind of just pay a little attention here. We have one brief announcement, and actually two brief announcements, and then we'll get back to the goodies.
Right? Isn't he wonderful?
Thank you.
Well, you've all seen our Miracle Festival that we're going to have the third weekend in August. Well, guess what? I asked Saul if he'd come back, and he said he'd love to. He's going to check on his calendar Monday and let us know. So Saul Steinberg will be with us.
Okay, just a little note. I've heard it from two or three people, and it's something that we've had in our mind, the point of the Bridge Builders. People wondering where groups are, when people can get together, where they meet, and so on. We have a phone now on all the flyers and on our cards. We have this phone number. And if you will call and leave your name and number, we will contact you, and we will be glad to interchange ideas on where groups are, when your meetings are. If you want to start new groups, by all means, get with us. Come and sit with our classes. We have two classes a week. Meredy Haddock has a couple of classes going. Many of the people here do have classes. Ann Spencer and my friend from Birmingham Unity. Get involved with this thing some way, but let us get a hold of your name, address, rank, and serial number and all that crap so that when something comes up, we can share it with you because that's what this is all about. So let's get back with it.
Thank you. One other thing I might add to that, if anybody here wishes to be put on our mailing list, we will not mail to you, hopefully, unless you want us to. And generally, we try to respect everyone's privacy by not turning our lists over to any other organizations or people that go out actively seeking lists. But if you would like to be put on our mailing list, if you would just fill out a little piece of paper in the back with Paul, we'll get you informed on as many things as we can of what's coming out in the future. Yes.
I'm going to take another question.
Sure.
One that I wanted to ask you before other writings that have helped people get at the Course in Miracles, and you didn't mention Love is Letting Go of Fear, and I'm wondering if you're going to bring that up. Is that it?
That's okay. That's fine. Love is Letting Go of Fear is, of course, the one of the biggies within the Course in Miracles, although it is not something that the foundation distributes or even prints, nor do I. The Love is Letting Go of Fear is a book that I use a great deal in my trying to help people who have certain problems where the Course in Miracles may be too deep for them to begin with. And I find that even in Orthodox Jewish people have a great deal of trouble with the Course in Miracles. I do use Love is Letting Go of Fear. And as a matter of fact, to back that up, sell the book, even though I don't print it. So it is a very beautiful book. And if you haven't read it, I would say that it's a beautiful reading book and certainly a beautiful introductory to A Course in Miracles. But I honestly believe that once you have been introduced to the Course in Miracles has no peer. So that it's something that if someone were to ask me, is it a good primer? I'd say it's a marvelous primer. Yes.
My name's John Decker, and I'm terribly fascinated by the history of the Course, and you've done so much to add the body to it. Can you give us a little sketch of your plan through on the original six that you spoke of?
Judd, you must be psychic, because that's about what we're going to start talking about right now. So we will answer your question, and I think that we should be able to walk out of here at the end of today's program, and certainly if I've left anything out and if I am able to answer any questions at all, please ask them, because what we're all about today is sharing, as Dan has so beautifully pointed out, and there are a lot of things that I do know, a lot of things that I perhaps don't know, but anything that I do know, you can rest assured that I'll share with all of my brothers and sisters here today. Yes?
What is your psychotherapy?
It's about I like to think that it's about 21st century psychotherapy, which should be used right now, today. And my feeling is very definitely that the psychotherapy book is a method or a means that will be used in the very, very near future and is being used today by psychotherapists. And we all are, in effect, psychotherapists. Make no mistake about it. When somebody comes to you who's hurting, you become their psychotherapist. Okay? And dealing with it, the book, in my opinion, sheds a great deal of insight how to deal with it and how to administrate therapy. And I can tell you, because I know very well, there is probably the greatest amount of sales of the psychotherapy book are done to doctors, psychiatrists, MSWs, and people who work with people on a day-to-day basis who really want to get into 21st century psychotherapy. Anyone else? Yes.
How many more people besides myself have thrown those books away a half a dozen?
Plenty. Plenty. I'll share a story with you that I may have told, but I'll tell it again because it's worth repeating. There is a young fellow in one of the islands in Hawaii who I gave a set of books to. And he was really a very happy young man, but somewhat confused when I met him. And I got a letter from him saying that he was really enjoying the books and thanking me for the books. And a couple of months later, I got a letter from him and said, "Saul, you make really strong books." He says, "It took me an hour and a half to tear it up and throw it in the Pacific Ocean." And he says, "It took me another hour after I dove in to retrieve all the pages." And there are a lot of people, of course, who become frustrated with the Course in Miracles, as with almost everything else that's around that's good, because what is really happening and what people want is instant gratification. Okay? We don't have time to do 365 lessons, and we don't have time to go ahead and take the time to study a new thought system. So it's kind of like, God, give me patience, and I want it right now. And I always kind of think that, you know, when people take their books and throw it against the wall, and there are many who do that, and you know what? We love them just the same. We hope and pray that they come to their senses and pick the books up again, because they're really missing one of the delights and one of the treats that are available to mankind, and that's humankind that we have around today. The Course is a beautiful piece of work, and which leads me into what I want to get into, and I think that we'll go on from there. I have written here on my notes that, continuing on with this lecture, I think the way to start is with reading the introduction to A Course in Miracles. And I think that the following the introduction, we'll talk a little bit about Helen, which I think a lot of us would like to know a little bit more about, and then get into how Helen actually got involved with all this, and the being that she was the scribe through whom it came. I've told you a lot about me. Let's talk a little bit about Helen and Bill and Judy and Ken, and we'll go from there. As most of you know, the introduction to the Course is probably some of the most beautiful language ever written. And anyone who is a student of the Course will recognize that this is not written by someone of this plane, but this is written by a master. And I'll read it. This is a Course in Miracles. It is a required course. Only the time you take it is voluntary. Free will does not mean that you can establish the curriculum. It means only that you can elect what you want to aim at teaching the meaning of love. For that is beyond what can be taught. It does aim, however, at removing the blocks to the awareness of love's presence, which is your natural inheritance. The opposite of love is fear. But what is all-encompassing can have no opposite. This course can therefore be summed up very simply in this way. Nothing real can be threatened. Nothing unreal exists. Herein lies the peace of God. That is perhaps the most beautiful words mankind has ever heard. But what is this Course in Miracles? And how did it all come about? And where did it all come from? And what is the secret to a set of books that have come to mankind, and without the benefit of advertising and without the aid of advertising agencies and just by word of mouth primarily, people are flocking to and people are leaning upon in a rather short time? The book is written in first person. So the reader has no real problem in distinguishing almost immediately who the author of the course is. And of course, that person we're referring to is Jesus. And I said that person because Jesus is a person. And in the book, as I've said before, he says to us that he wants nothing but to be recognized as an elder brother who has much to teach us. And teach us he does. Now, for what possible reason would Jesus want these books presented to us here in the 20th century? And the answer is relatively simple. We've screwed up with the message for 2,000 years. We just didn't get it right. So he's giving us another opportunity to get that message right by giving us some very beautiful words and some very powerful experiences and some very lovely thoughts to follow and to work with. Well, imagine, if you would for a moment, Jesus saying, well, how do I do this and get it to the people who are supposed to have it? And just imagine a little further, out of all the people in this world to bring the Course in Miracles to, why would he pick on a woman, a psychiatrist, at a hospital in New York City to entrust that message to? Why her? Certainly, she didn't have the credentials for it. She was a woman born Jewish, converted to Catholicism at age 20, renounced Catholicism at age 22, and got her master's degree by writing a thesis on why there is no God. How in the world does she become the logical choice? And yet, when we look at it today, there could have been no other choice for the simple reason that she was the one who would, in fact, get the job done. She was absolutely terrified when she started hearing a voice. And suddenly, imagine, if you would, working in one of the largest hospitals in the world, being second to the administrator and the head of the psychology department at a huge hospital in the city of New York, and all of a sudden you start hearing voices in your late 50s. After believing that there is no God and believing sincerely that you're an atheist. Well, it terrified her, as it would anyone. And it was, of course, something that triggered this within her own self. As I said, she was a kind of cranky woman, ready to argue, ready to bicker. And she would fight, I guess, constantly with her superior, Dr. Bill Thetford. And one day they just looked at each other and said, why does it have to be like this? Why do we have to fight with one another all the time? We respect each other, and I guess we love each other. But why does it have to be like this? And she uttered some simple words, which was the trigger for this whole episode. Those words were, there must be a better way. And indeed, Jesus heard those words and agreed. There is a better way. And started talking to Helen at the oddest times, at the hospital, in the toilet, in the bath, in the lunchroom, on the subway, walking, riding, on weekends. And she would hear this voice constantly. And she started to believe that she was going insane. She really felt that she was losing her marbles. And one day, she went over to her superior, whom she respected, fought with a lot, but respected, and said, "I think I'm losing my mind." And he said, "Well, why do you say that?" She says, "I hear a voice." And he looked at her and said, "You hear a voice?" And she said, "Yes, I hear a voice." And she says, "I hear it constantly. And I hear it at the oddest times. And I keep hearing it." And Bill kind of paused and said to her, "What is the voice saying?" And she looked at him, I guess, very sheepishly, and said, "The voice is saying, this is A Course in Miracles, take dictation." And he said, "What?" And she said, "This is A Course in Miracles, take dictation." She says, "I think I'm going crazy. What shall I do?" And Bill, being one of the greatest psychiatrists of all times, came back with the most prolific words ever uttered by one psychiatrist to another: "You better, sure enough, take dictation." And take dictation she did. And she started to take dictation. And I'm sure that Bill questioned in the very beginning,